Hey y'all, it's V, the Tackling Strategist. It's Sunday morning, March 24th. I'm going to get right into the segment. So I met with this group yesterday that is formed primarily, they're members of civic associations here in Houston, but they just decided, I guess I first started talking to them about 6 months ago. And they wanted to see how they could get together with people that had been, that they'd known in the neighborhood for a very long time, and decided to get with those people because they knew who they were and they were still there, you know, in the neighborhood, and wouldn't be moved by a lot of the things that are going on now to get people uprooted. And so I went out yesterday. Been talking to them about various strategies to use to accomplish some of the things they're trying to accomplish. And so I met with them yesterday, and we talked about it, had a really good time. We talked about a laundry list of things, but I will say that the biggest thing we talked about, and what I can talk about on here, is the reminders every day now, and the topic of squatter's rights or adverse possession. So, you know, I had to explain to them that media's funny like that. None of the things that's going on right now in the media, where they're showing us more cases of property owners getting into squabbles with squatters and those type of things, and even we've been looking at a lot of news lately about homeowners associations and people losing their homes and things like that. And if we're not careful, and if we don't think, we will really go around here thinking that these things are new. But for the Black collective, none of this is new. And so I don't want us to feel as if, when we feel as if some of the things that are going on now are like new happenings, we will soon forget our history and soon forget that a lot of us are here now and trying to, at this point in life, still develop strategies to hold on to what you own when we shouldn't be, because our heritages, our lineages, our history teaches us and others, if they are so inclined to pay attention, that this has been our story since the beginning of time. Immediately after emancipation, folks started devising plans to send us back to Africa. So you can give free service in all the atrocities that have happened. You can go through all of that, and the best we can do for you is, now your service is no longer, you know, you can no longer be of service to us, because we want to continue to have free service, or to continue to get, you know, pay you very, very small minimal amounts for wages as a sharecropper. I don't know what they mean by sharecropper, because, well, it wasn't equal sharing, I tell you that. And so, of course, there were people born, free people of color born before, you know, slavery. Very few, though. And so more of them were up north. I made sure they were up north. Not because there wasn't racism up north, but because people were different, somewhat, kind of, down south than they were up north. And let's face it, we had more slaves in the south because that was where the agriculture was. And the north, of course, had more industry. So you saw less Blacks up there. Let's just tell the truth about the whole thing. So you had more racism and it was everywhere, but of course it was more concentrated in the South because every person was seen as, or it benefited every white person to be racist in the South. But we've always had these issues to deal with. So I don't want black people to get distracted, think this is something new, and start going out there and giving false information about our history. Because history is important, because it's the only way you don't repeat it. That's why I do this podcast. And that's why we keep talking about race. Because we have to continue to make sure that generation after generation after generation knows what happened, so we don't go back there, so it doesn't happen again. Because they're steadily trying to put us back there, even in 2024. But y'all know I can get on this 5 or 6 topics on one episode because there's so much to talk about. We talking about race relations. So I'm going to try my level best to keep this where it should be. And that's with the topic of adverse possession squatters' rights. So what I had to do, because I believe in just, instead of just talking and bringing back some history, and I appreciate it was a lady, because that's how I think, ask me, did I think that was anything written in the founding, you know, in the original Constitution about adverse possession and you know, squatters' rights. I'm looking for my notes. I got them here. And so she wanted to know how this stuff starts. And I'm like that too. I always like to go, so how did all this come about? And so now my research goes back way and beyond and try to bring it back up to today. So basically she wanted to know, this squatters' rights, this adverse possession thing, was it written into, you know, the laws that our founding fathers wrote? And I've done a talk on this before. And so I'll just really, if anybody wants that link or references, I'll send you to where it's published. Otherwise, I'll just kind of shorten it here. The laws of squatters' rights and adverse possession weren't explicitly written into the laws by the founding fathers. And it has its roots in English common law, which, you know, that influenced American law during the colonial period and after the founding of the United States. So the idea behind adverse possession is that if someone occupies and uses land for a certain period without the owner's objection, they can eventually gain legal title to the land. Now, there was a reason for that statement. Now, understand now, our founding fathers made a bunch of mistakes, okay? And that's why so many, you know, parts of the Constitution were expounded on or were lengthened or were, you know, different laws now. But the principle was adopted to encourage the settlement and development of land. Now, you know all that land they had in the frontier regions, right? Okay, so it was in a way to develop and to, you know, add states, add, you know, this was during part of the 13 colonies. We didn't have all these states yet. And so it was a way to encourage production and to develop land, especially in the frontier regions. So because it was a intent to encourage the productive use of land, it wasn't explicitly stated, but it was incorporated into American law and has been used to resolve disputes and to promote the efficient use of land. Okay? So, efficient use of land. That's now, this is when we start getting into dealing with people. Because let's say there was a land dispute. Let's say there was a land dispute between two neighbors. And there was a, like we call them, alleys. Let's see. And you had to use a part of that land to get to the alley in the back. Because there's some cities, there are some places that are designed that way. You got your house here on the front of the street, and you have a like a trail. We call it alleys. And you have property back there. A lot of it is reminiscent of some architecture in certain states. You can cities, you can look at them and know that they were directly related to slavery, just because of the layout of the property, where you know, so and so lived in the big house, and the houses in the back were, you know, where their you know, slaves lived, or, you know, that type of thing. So a lot of those properties are designed that way, easements and things like that. But today, the efficient use of land is a principle in urban planning, environmental management, and real estate development that aims to optimize the utilization of land resources while considering the environment, the economy, and social factors. Okay, so zoning and land use planning and those type of things. So what I'm saying is, today the efficient use of land isn't what they were thinking about when the founding fathers, you know, when we adopted this squatters' rights and adverse possession thing. Okay, when those things were done, it was to resolve boundary disputes, say to say. That was the intent, to resolve boundary disputes. Let's say a fence or a building has encroached on a neighbor's property, and the situation has been accepted for many years. That's what we mean when we say without the owner's permission. Why? Because if the both parties don't know that the fence encroaches even an inch, then that is claiming that portion of your neighbor's, you know, property. Neither one of you know. Also, to correct title defects. Adverse possession can correct title defects in title, especially in cases where land has been occupied and used under the belief of ownership. If I believe that this portion is mine, and I believe that because somewhere there's a defect in my property title, then I have, in essence, exercised the rights of adverse possession. Okay? And so it also encourages the productive use of land, ensuring that abandoned or neglected properties are maintained and utilized. Okay. And then there's a statute of limitations. It acts as a statute of limitations on property claims, providing legal certainty and stability by preventing the reopening of long-settled property disputes. Okay. But what if someone, some greedy, hungry developer who thinks that no property should be empty, Now, property belonging to someone. Here we go now, bringing this up to today. What happens when a developer, because it does happen, thinks that property should not be empty, even. And starts working his magic on trying to acquire ownership of that property. Or let's say a homeless person. Now, it's rare cases where property that's owned by an active property owner is going to let time go by and not know that their property has been broken into by a homeless person and who's living there, you know, that type of thing. The typical property that's broken into is empty, has no utilities, and through the course of time has suffered neglect, meaning that, you know, in different sides, there's signs of neglect. We know what they are. I mean, we can, it's kind of hard to, you know, just mention some of those things at the moment, but we know the look. We know the look. The things that when we drive down the street, that we do a double take. Tall grass, the address number is missing, or parts of the numbers are missing. There are signs out there that will lead you to believe that a property may be abandoned or neglected, okay? But see, here's what happens. When people pull the property records or the tax statements of these properties, and they see over 65 homestead exemptions, so zero taxes on the statement, they figure that the homeowner is deceased and the family doesn't want the property. Now we're assuming things. The problem that this group has is this. They're going to start taking care of the abandoned properties in their neighborhood. They're going to start cutting the grass, and they're going to start making repairs on the property as a group, not to own it, but to protect it, but to guard it. And that's a good thing, because now we have people doing what they want to do based on assumptions. Because see, the owner could live around the corner. Maybe the property is not in shape for the to live in, and the family can't afford to make the repairs right now. Doesn't mean it's abandoned, because the laws of squatters' rights doesn't say anything about it, whether it looks abandoned or not. It tells you what you have to do in order to claim squatter's rights. It lets you know how many years you have to occupy it, how, and that the taxes must be paid. It does. It's real vague. It doesn't even say when you have to pay. Start paying taxes on it. I mean, people know to just start paying. I've had people who've squatted who I just kind of told them, well, hey, just, you know, make monthly payments. Just show good faith. Show that I'm aware that taxes are due. Just do that. Do something. Okay? So that the tax statement shows the payment has been made. And live in it. Live in it open. Live openly. Meaning that you don't hide the fact that you're there. Sit on your porch. You know, put up curtains. You know, live in it as if you would live in it. If it were yours. Now, if someone comes and can prove ownership, that's a different situation. Because it depends on how long you've been there. My thing is, This seems more like a community issue to fix, rather than some developer who lives in River Oaks coming over to the poor parts of town, as they call it, and decides he knows everything he needs to know about the history of the property and decides now that he's going to get it just simply because he wants it. But it happens. How does it happen? Okay, I'll tell you. When people think about back taxes, they think about the county. They think about the Harris County tax office sending these properties to auction. They don't think about the fact that a lot of these auctions are, the auction actions are precipitated by school districts. Harris County, and I don't have my notes in front of me, I can't remember how many school districts are in Harris County. Each of those school districts has a law firm. Linebarger is just one law firm. And Linebarger does more than collect property taxes. That's just one of the things they do for municipalities. Each district has a law firm. The school district gets the largest part of your tax dollar. It stands to reason that they would have a school district, that they would have a law firm. That law firm is where the buddies of some of these developers are. Okay. Also, never forget that our government can use the power of eminent domain for public use. Now, their private concerns, as they say, they can also use the power of eminent domain. But it's not supposed to be private companies. It's supposed to be private entities such as utility companies, phone companies, you know, those type of things. As they're bringing in new services, utilities for development. But our country is not against claiming large pieces of property as eminent domain for the use of new things coming to the neighborhood, but only using a portion of it, with the larger portion of it being used by private development. That isn't right. That's not the way that's supposed to be. So, of course, people have friends in high places. Let me just put it this way. So, because of those, because I explained to them how this goes, they're going to pay a lot more attention to everything. They're going to pay a lot more attention to when people pull permits. They're going to pay a lot more attention to when eminent domain is supposedly being used. This is how you organize. You take it upon yourselves to go to work for your community. Because most of our communities, well, I put it like this. I have people tell me all the time, oh, you always have something to say. Don't the communities look a lot better since gentrification has happened? So you're talking about aesthetics now? So you're saying people should be robbed of their wealth in land just to have live next door to construction, where the garage, what they're considering a two-car garage, is really a one-car garage now? Because I've never said this before, but I've developed land too. I've developed property too. Well, the dimensions of lot sizes are not, it's about to be a foregone conclusion. We're never going to see this again. Where people have nice size, 10,000 lot size square foot lots with a house and their children were able to run and play. Now developers going to stick 4 or 5 buildings on it. You know, this stuff that simulates prison type of, I wish somebody would look into the psychology behind some of this construction. It's horrible. It looks horrible. Well, you have no more front yard. They're putting it right in the city now and not back someplace with the homeowners association. Because remember something. Black people were pushed out. They were pushed to certain areas. And they made it work. All these urban areas, black people were pushed to because they weren't welcomed anywhere else. And they made it work, despite the fact that they didn't have their generational wealth. Despite the fact that the government, our cities, our counties, our states, can beautify and bring infrastructure through these neighborhoods without it having to be gentrified to do it. So don't call me about the look, the aesthetics, the fact that the neighborhoods look cleaner and better. Because what you're really saying is, because we're making better use of the land and you won't have so many homeless people living on the corners. Well, we know, because gentrification is overly concerned with aesthetics as well. They don't want to see homeless. They don't want to see it. And because they don't want to see it, then they feel like they should not have it, just for that reason alone. So black people were pushed to these neighborhoods. They did the best they could. They built, they developed, and a lot of it was white flight. So a lot of homes were there. When black people started moving in, white people started moving out. Okay, black people started building. Inner city. People didn't even realize they would want these areas again because they were looking at it with a jaundiced eye and they were looking at it with a one-track mind. We don't have a lack of land problem. We have a racism problem. We don't have a lack of this or a lack of that problem. We have a racism problem. And so I'm going to prove it on this podcast. I've already proven it, but some people just, you know, and plus I love it when people say your episode so-and-so is what spurred me and my family to get involved. Will you come out and help us with this strategy? Help us put this strategy together. Help us devise a plan and tell us what we need to do to retain the properties that black people have left. And before I end this podcast, this segment, and I decided a long time ago I wasn't going to continue to explain to people because when you start explaining a lot of your life, you can end up explaining your life away. One of the reasons we as a people haven't progressed further is because every time someone asks us why, we stop what we're doing and we're so happy to oblige and answer white people's questions that we leave our shit undone because we're too busy over here trying to explain to them why we are trying to fix our problem. And you look up and a year's gone by, 2 years gone, we got the same problem. So we work, my company, my team and I work to retain because we ain't got no problem with no white people moving into no neighborhood. We want you to get it for fair market value. What's wrong with that? People have had centuries, years, generation after generation after generation of acquiring property from black people for pennies on the dollar. You should have, you're rich, you're millionaires because of that now. You don't have enough money now. You got to still get properties for pennies on the dollar. You got to still come out and offer black people $5,000 for their property. And that you know is worth a lot more than that. So I'm teaching them why, you know, the way this goes. I'm teaching them what pennies on the dollar meant and why they should stop. They should understand that people who come grinning and skinning and grinning are not, that doesn't mean that they're coming with a clean heart. And why should that? I mean, you know, if the word is out that you're gullible, if the word is out that you don't know what you're doing, then of course people are going to flock to you. All you got to do is know the law. And that's my job now, I see, is to teach people because people just don't know. People aren't dumb. People aren't stupid. But when the disclaimers on the tax office website is minuscule and people can't see it, and when the fact that there's overages belong to the community is in such small print, so small that it looks like dots across the screen, when you don't advertise it, when the media talks about crime in black neighborhoods louder than it talks about saving the neighborhoods, somebody's got to help the people understand what it is that they're doing. I will continue this conversation about how we strategized on some things on the next segment.